Okay, so part two is shorter than part one. And we'll be focused, no pun intended, on therapeutic ultrasound in the second part here. All right, so you remember we talked about absorption and where you launch this mechanical wave through some medium, in the body, the tissues of the body, and you're losing energy as it propagates through. And so as you lose that energy, it doesn't just go away, it typically is turning into heat. Now, you can use that for good or evil, but the way to think about this is that the objective with therapeutic ultrasound, and I'm going to be talking just about high-intensity focused ultrasound, not the sort of physical therapy ultrasound, which is basically just a tissue heater, kind of thing that is unfocused. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the kind of ultrasound where you're actually going to destroy tissue with it. And the way that this works, and the way that any of these sort of energy devices work, whether it's radio frequency or what have you, is that what you're trying to do is cause a controlled injury to the tissue, and then you're going to rely on the body's natural wound healing response to give you whatever effect it is that you ultimately want to achieve. There's not sort of a direct effect necessarily that you're going to get from the radiation of the energy, but you're going to get a wound healing response that is going to give you something that you want. And I'll explain that as we go. So the way that this works, it basically has to do again with this idea that ultrasound is the energy source that you can focus deep in the body. And the analogy that I always use is the magnifying glass in the sun. So you got your sun, you got your magnifying glass. If I put my hand right up against the glass, no problem, right? Because there's the energy density is very, very low. But then it brings it down to a tight focus, and then you have this concentration of energy where you can set your lawn on fire or what have you. It's exactly the same thing with focused ultrasound, where you have potentially a fairly large transducer. So, for instance, in the company I'm working now, where we're doing a women's health application, it's 140 millimeter transducer, F1 mechanically focused transducer. So, it's about that big on the skin surface, but then you're bringing it down to about a millimeter focal point. And so all the energy that you're getting out of this 140 millimeter transducer, you're concentrating it down to a millimeter or so. And you get huge focal gain from something like that. And that you can do some work with. So HIFU, high intensity focused ultrasound. There's no sort of generally accepted definition about what's low intensity and what's high intensity. It is different from the unfocused ultrasound that you have for physical therapy. You go to your chiropractor or what have you that we were talking about. It's less than a watt per centimeter squared of intensity, where you can be talking about thousands of watts per square centimeter in focused ultrasound. And again, the ability to focus, it makes this very, very unique. Now, this is one where I'm going to have to jump out because for whatever reason, Windows doesn't want to play this video, but it's instructive. So what we're showing here, this is a setup in a gel phantom. And what this is, it's a gelatin that's got bovine albumin in it. And basically, it's sort of a binary thermometer that if you exceed a certain temperature level, it turns opaque. And so right now, it's all clear. But it's illuminated here. When I show you the movie, I'll be looking in sideways at this, and you'll be able to actually see the effect of the ultrasound as we cook the gel. I hope. Let's see. So we'll come back to that. Very cool video that I hope to be able to show you. Okay, so here's a bunch of math, blah, blah, blah. The point with this is that if you heat tissue up, you can heat it up pretty fast, but then there's going to be sort of a natural decay of the temperature that you have to be aware of when you're doing this, and it follows this mathematical equation here. And this is basically a plot. It's a your usual sort of exponential plot. But look at the time scales here. You know, even at about 10 seconds, you're pretty far up the chart there. And so what happens then is that, you know, if you're doing this in tissue and you're doing repeated sort of treatments, you wind up with something like this, where if you raise the tissue to this, you know, temperature of one with your first pulse here, and then you don't wait very long, and then you give it a second shot, you actually get up, you know, 50% more. Now I can show you the video. Don't you love Microsoft? All right. Okay, here we go. So you see how it just sort of appears in the middle of nowhere here? Run it again. So there's the surface. That's where the transducer is. But, you know, nothing's happening up here. But you can, you know, get that effect down there. That's the whole basis of focused ultrasound for therapy. All right. So here's a sample application. And this is that aesthetic company that I used to run, called Liposonics. And so the idea here, again, was that what we're going to do is use this mechanically focused transducer that's focused in the subcutaneous fat, move it along, and cause lesions in the fat. We're basically going to necrose the fat tissue here. And then we're going to rely on the body's normal wound healing response. The macrophages are going to come in, grab up the lipid from in here, and process it through the liver just like any other fat would be processed. So completely non-invasive, non-surgical alternative to liposuction. And yes, this really works. And here's an example of it working. So here's a before and after picture. So there's the before contour, and then over the course of 4 weeks, that's what you get. Mm-hmm. So it really did what it said it was going to do. So this is the one that I'm working on now. This is a company called Mirabilis. And it's a women's health company, and the objective is to treat uterine fibroids. So uterine fibroids are these non-cancerous fibrotic growths that you get in the fibroid. The interesting thing about this is the prevalence is huge. You know, at some point, 75% of all women, period, are going to have uterine fibroids, right? And 25% of all women are going to have symptomatic uterine fibroids, meaning that it's bad enough that you really want to do something about it. You know, you have abnormal bleeding, have plush pressure on the bladder. They can be so big that you get infertile. You have spontaneous abortions. I mean, they're not a good deal. So, you know, this is the disease state that we're going after, which is, you know, a pretty significant public health kind of concern. So the idea, here's some results from what we're doing. So again, basically we're using a mechanically focused 140 millimeter transducer to focus down in the uterus. And so we're typically talking about depths of, you know, 6 to 14 centimeters, depending on how thick the person is. Here's a picture of post-treatment fibroid. So this is contrast magnetic resonance imaging. The basic idea here is, so you can see this sort of circle here, that's the fibroid, the capsule of the fibroid. And anywhere that it's bright, that's where the contrast media is going. And so where it's not bright, that's where it's not going, which means there's no blood supply to that tissue. And so what we've done here is we've necrosed the tissue so there's no more blood supply to that tissue, and killed it, which is exactly what you want to do. And so this is actually, this woman here was going for a hysterectomy anyway. And so we did the treatment, got the post-treatment image, then she went for hysterectomy, so we got the tissue sample afterwards. And this is with a viability stain, so the pink is still viable tissue. This is all fibroid. The pink is viable tissue, and this is not. So, you know, pretty good correspondence there. That's exactly what you want to do. And again, the objective here is that, you know, killing the tissue by itself, it doesn't give you any sort of instantaneous effect. What it does do is once you've killed the tissue, it's going to eventually resorb and go away. So you get the macrophages, you know, the normal body's wound healing response is going to get in there, get that tissue out of there, and you're going to have a reduction in volume of the tumor, of this benign tumor here. It's the volume of the tumor that is giving you the symptoms. So it's the volume of the tumor that's, you know, distorting the uterine cavity, that's causing the abnormal bleeding, or it's the volume of the tumor that's putting pressure on your bladder or what have you. You know, that's what you do. And so, you know, you can go in there surgically and remove it, but then you got all kinds of surgical risk, and maybe you become infertile, and, you know, so on and so forth. And, you know, in the United States, the go-to therapy for something like this, particularly a big one like that, is hysterectomy. And shockingly, not a lot of people are actually interested in having their uterus removed. So if you can have a non-invasive alternative like this, we think that's going to be a winner. So that's basically how it works. Now, the next slide I'll show you, you know, over time.
Is your goal to kill the whole thing?
You don't have to. And in fact, there's good studies on this that if you, so this is what we call non-perfused volume. There's a study by a woman named Stewart that's probably the definitive study that shows that you get a clinically significant effect if you kill 20% or more of the tumor. And you sort of get diminishing returns after 50%. So, you know, it's very time consuming, and you take on more risk if you try to kill the whole thing. And if you can get, you know, 90% as good a job by killing half the tumor, that's what we do.
So the guys that go in there and eat up this thing.
That's the Power Morse later thing. Yeah, yes. And that's a very bad deal. So that's the one that the FDA told you can't use anymore.
No, I mean the
macrophages. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So they go in and they eat the dead part.
Yes.
What happens to the live part?
It'll stay.
That's okay.
That's fine. Yeah, because again, what you want is a significant reduction in the volume.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool.
What is your main source of funding?
Venture funding. So I've got two big venture funds that they're funding us now. There's been roughly $25 million went into this so far, and we're hopefully just about to get European marketing clearance for it. Okay, so next slide shows over time. So again, what you want is to shrink the fibroid, and here's an example of doing it. So here's the before picture. This is immediately after treatment, and then this is 90 days later. And so if you go through all the 3D slices of the MR, you can actually figure out the volume of the fibroid before and after treatment, and we reduce the volume of the fibroid by half in this. And so this is a happy girl. In fact, this is another woman who was scheduled for hysterectomy and decided not to have the surgery because her symptoms were essentially gone at that point. And so that's what you want.
Is there any benefit to having a hysterectomy vis-a-vis this?
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, the fibroid can be so big that, you know, any reasonable reduction is still not going to give you the effect that you want. You know, maybe there's other concerns. It's a medical issue where, you know, certainly there's applications for hysterectomy where you're taking out the entire uterus, or myomectomy where you're taking out just, you know, you're trying to get just the fibroid. But we believe that, you know, there's a lot of situations where you can just as well do this and shrink it.
Do you have any rough idea percentage-wise of where this might be the better choice?
It's hard to say. We think we're probably applicable to 60 to 70% of fibroids. 60 to 70%, and I mean the thing is, you also got to remember that, you know, if you get a 10-centimeter fibroid, it didn't start out at 10 centimeters. It started out at nothing, and it grew that big. So if you catch them, you know, when they're sort of in our range, you know, then you can do something about it. There's also certain places, like if the fibroid is right up against the spine, you can't treat it. Because the ultrasound will still give you tinglies and so on, and it's just not good.
Do you experience resistance from, you know, the people who want to continue doing hysterectomies? And
well, there's a saying in the business that surgeons want to do surgery. and that has been the case in every therapeutic device I've ever worked on. And so there's always going to be people who say, yeah, I don't need this crap. And then there's going to be people who say, that, you know, look, if this is going to give my patients a better experience, then that's what we're going to use. And, you know, it comes down to attitude and, you know, what sort of patient experience they want to deliver and, you know, how well the technology actually ultimately works. I mean, this is still early days. It's not commercially available yet. We hope it will be commercially available in Europe. This year is probably going to be another 2 to 3 years for the U.S.
Two questions. Does this actually stop the growth of the tumor? One question, and the second question
yep.
is, can it turn the benign tumor into a less benign?
Yeah, so there's no evidence that any ultrasound-related bioeffect can, you know, cause cancer. There just isn't any. I mean, the way to think about that is it's a heater, right? And what's, you know, fire doesn't cause cancer. So... but there's, yeah, luckily there's no smoke. So. Yeah. And I forgot the first part of your question, sorry.
Okay. Well, does it stop the growth?
No, it doesn't. And so what you wind up doing is that you can you know, kill some significant portion of the tumor, and then it'll shrink. And then these things just keep growing. And, you know, 5-10 years later, it may be a problem again, and you treat them again. You know, there's nothing saying you can't do this again. What tends to happen probably more often is that, you know, people have multiple fibroids, and so you treat the one that's causing the problem, and then 5 years later you have a problem again, but it's not the same one, it's something different. Mm-hmm. You treat that.
So the third part would be, does this ever break it up and cause it to grow in
no,
place?
It stays in place.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Doesn't move it at all. And where I was going, I don't know how many of you guys read this in the paper, there was this huge scandal probably a year ago now where there was a J&J product called a Power Morcellator, where an alternative treatment for this is they have this little, you know, sort of grinder thing on it. You think of it as sort of a stump grinder on a stick that they put into this, and they actually just grind up the tissue and aspirate it. And what was happening was that in rare circumstances, they misdiagnosed it, and it wasn't actually a fibroid. It actually was a cancer. And they go in and spread that all over the place, and then it's now they've got metastases all over the place, and it's a train wreck. So that's what you don't want to do.
What would happen to yours if it was cancer?
Well, you know, fact is we don't know, but... Yeah. The theory is that since we're not actually moving any tissue anywhere, it's not going to be any worse than it already was, and in fact, it might be better.
Mm-hmm. I had a question. Are you actually taking, as you're using this treatment, are you also doing ultrasound and getting imaging at the same
yes,
time?
Yes, exactly right. Yeah, and so if you take apart our system, we have this, you know, 140 millimeter HIFU bowl. It's actually got a hole in the middle of it where we stick a imaging transducer through it, and so it's ultrasound guided ultrasound. Mm-hmm. Now it turned like Philips has and GE have MR guided ultrasound systems. And so you have, you know, an MR tube with an ultrasound in a table that you lay on, and you can get treatment that way. Big disadvantage with those systems is that they're super slow, and one of the technical advantages that we've got here, which is probably beyond the scope of the talk, is that we're super fast. Like, we can do this treatment in 4 to 10 minutes, whereas with an MR-guided system, it's 3 to 4 hours of magnet time, and so you have to be sedated, and it's not a good deal.
So when you talk about how much power you could use that was safe for just ultrasound,
yeah.
What type of power was that compared to this?
This is about 14,000 times more, so a lot.
More than a few dB.
Yeah.
And so they take a biopsy to find out if it's, you know, benign or whatever. What do you guys do? Same thing, take a biopsy?
You certainly can. I mean, you know, when you take a biopsy, you do take a certain risk that, you know, if it is cancer, then you're spreading it, you know, along the needle track by taking the sample. So, I mean, the biopsy is the definitive way to do the diagnosis. I mean, often, if there's a suspicion, they'll send them to MR first, where you can actually get better tissue resolution and, you know, try to determine whether it's, you know, a fibroma or if it's something worse. But, you know, the biopsy is the definitive way to do it.
Okay.
Are you going to talk about the difference between MRI and ultrasound type?
Not really.
That's, I don't have a clue what the difference is.
Yeah. Electromagnetic versus mechanical wave, basically. Okay, so now we're sort of winding down. Those are my two examples. I've got a couple of slides of just other effects that are interesting in therapeutic ultrasound. So remember, you know, this is a mechanical wave, and you've got compressional areas, and you've got rarefactional areas. It turns out that in the rarefactional areas, you can actually have negative pressures that are so high that dissolved gases will come out of solution and form little microbubbles. And then as the next pressure wave comes along, positive pressure wave comes along, they pop. And that pop can actually cause quite a bit of damage and heating. So, you know, something you may be familiar with if you're boating is cavitation effects on a propeller that will chew up a propeller. And that's because of the negative pressure that you get around the propeller, bubbles forming, bubbles popping, it'll actually chew up your propeller. So you can get quite a lot of energy out of these things. And again, it's an effect that can be used for good and evil. If you have stable cavitation, we actually use this at Mirabilis to get an enhanced heating effect. So we're going for cavitation in the focal zone. You have to be sure that you're able to control that, but if you're able to create these microbubbles in a controlled way, you actually get a nonlinear increase in your heating potential, and that's one of the effects that allows us to go much faster than other people do. Localized boiling. I mean, it's different than cavitation, but I mean, you can heat things hotter than 100 degrees C with this stuff, and so you can actually boil the tissue.
And that's centigrade, presumably.
Yeah, 100 degrees centigrade. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Acoustic streaming.
That's bad to boil.
I'm sorry.
That's bad to boil.
Not well. Again, can be used for good. Can be used for evil. Right. I mean, you can. There's some people that are working on treatments for lipomas and cysts, where what they actually want to do is boil the contents of the cyst to get rid of the cyst. For vein therapy, you know, you got spider veins or what have you. There's you know, sclerotic therapies that they use for that, and some of them are RF, but some people are using ultrasound now too, where basically you sort of boil the blood in the vein, and that closes it down, and that gets rid of the effect.
Is that common in the States?
No. Most of this stuff is available, you know, 5 years prior outside the United States. There's a lot higher. Yeah, anybody from the FDA in the audience? let's say there are much different requirements for approval of a medical device in the United States than there are outside the United States.
One more question.
Yeah.
What country in Europe do you think is like? Has the leading edge on this, or what country?
Often these things start in Germany simply because there's private hospitals you can go to. It's a big population. It's the largest population in Europe. There's good academic centers and so on and so forth. So the first place that we're going with Mirabilis is a private center in Frankfurt, which is exactly the same thing that we did with Liposonics. It was a private center in Dusseldorf. Acoustic streaming, actually radiation pressure can move mass. And so, you know, within fluid, like within a cyst or something, you can actually cause a streaming effect where the fluid is moving, and you can, you know, cause it to move so violently up against the capsule of a cyst or something, you can pop the cyst. Which is sort of interesting. So, last slide. So the big wind-up here is that, you know, I think, you know, ultrasound is pretty interesting. I've obviously made a career of it. It's got all the same properties as audible sound. I mean, it's all mechanical waves, but because the frequencies are so high, you know, probably the more useful analogies are with optics, you know, the things that we talked about. You can focus it in tissue, and that's unique and useful. It's really the only energy source you can do that with, and that has both diagnostic and therapeutic implications. For diagnostic modality, it's premature. There haven't really been fundamental advances in diagnostic ultrasound over the course of the last, you know, 15, 20 years. I mean, it certainly improves 10% every year, but there haven't been any fundamental leaps. So in that sense, it's kind of a mature modality. Tissue heating is a primary bioeffect, and we use that for therapeutic applications. That is a much less mature area. There's not so many applications that are certainly commercially available. In fact, it's just this year, probably the most advanced therapy is for benign prostate hyperplasia and prostate cancer. And it's just this year that that's was approved in the U.S. It's been available outside the U.S. for about 12, 13 years, starting in France, and then there was a U.S. company.
What exactly is that?
What is?
What you just described for prostate.
Well, basically, they have a focused ultrasound transducer, again, that they focus through the rectum into the prostate and ablate the tissue. So that's the therapy. I'm sorry?
Sorry, what is it?
Oh, it just means cook it, basically. Okay. So you just destroy the tissue. Yeah.
So they're curing people from cancer?
Yes. And, you know, and this is a real application that, you know, if someone came to me today and said that I had prostate cancer and I had to do something about it, which is questionable because most guys, like 90% of guys, will die with but not of prostate cancer. Okay? And so if those two things, you know, I've got it and I got to do something about it, I'm probably going to go to France and get treated with an EDAP system. I mean, yeah, it's my view, it's a better alternative than other therapies that are available.
And no chemo.
Well, you certainly can have chemo. It's like any other thing. I mean, if you have if you have a lumpectomy for breast, even if they think they got the whole thing, they're going to give you chemo just in case. And it's the same thing here. That's it.